Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
His first name is George. I introduced myself. He introduced himself. We had a very pleasant conversation. He was going on. This was going up. He was going on to Boston. This was the early train. He was going on to Boston, and we had a nice chat. And I didn't know what to say when he said he's a PTI guy. I mean, and I think I wrote Michael. Would you read the last sentence?
The last line, yeah. Quote, "I'm trapped here like a badger in a cage." So maybe that conversation wasn't as fruitful as you remember.
That's right.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All right, I have no such train rides to talk about today. We're doing a podcast. We're live on Monday morning at Chatter at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest, Jennifer Street Northwest. We're open for breakfast. We're open for business. We're full profit, full service. We thank everybody for coming. Last minute, I said last night to Ron, I was going to do a podcast. And he says, well, we didn't know about that. And I said,
Probably
he said, well,
fault.
Nigel was supposed to tweet that out. I said, well, what can I tell you? So he tweeted it out, and now we have a crowd.
He's pressed into action, though.
And he's waiting tables.
Right.
Our manager, our general manager, Rhonda Giovanni, is waiting tables. So, and doing a good job. And by the way, it's okay to tip him. It's all right.
Yes,
you don't
have
to, but it's okay.
20, 100.
So here's what he told me also. And this is a shout out in the neighborhood to someone who apparently lives in Friendship Heights, whose name is Alonzo Babers. Oh. And he has come into Chatter and he listens to the podcast. He is a 2-time Olympic gold medalist in the 400 meters in Los Angeles, and I was there, and
you
I confess
there.
I don't remember that.
Randy Newman.
And a member of the 4x400 gold medal relay team in 1984. We are happy he listens, happier that he comes in.
Yeah, here he is.
So thank you
very much. I mean, not here, but I see him on the internet. Yep.
Yeah, he is.
Age 56.
Yeah. Steve Bachman writes, "My middle child, a masculine child, is getting married on August 18th. That happened already. Yes, that's 81818 for those of you who obsess over numbers as I do. That's an ambigram. That's not a palindrome.
That's an ambigram.
Up and down, exactly the same.
And upside down.
And upside down. Since you clearly aren't working, I thought you and the gang, yes, even Chris, could join us for the festivities.
Wow.
For those of you who have irrational fears regarding air travel, I would note that the ceremony and reception will take place in Orange, Virginia, an easy 2-hour drive from the D.C. metro area. What better place for the Orange man to spend some quality time than among his people in Orange? To sweeten the pot, I've included a box of Boeing 787 Dreamliner plush toys. Who got those today?
Oh, yeah, those are out there.
All right.
Very exciting.
And they say we don't
perhaps
give them
one of these could be added to your collection of amulets to ward off bad spirits on future. No, I gave them out. Anyway, so much congratulations to the people getting married. I signed the card. Happy to do so. What else do we have here? I think, I came in here last night for Restaurant Week. Restaurant Week is over now. We had a great special. At $35, you could get a 3-course meal, including Elizabeth's fabulous homemade desserts. I think that this week may be DC Beer Week. I think that what you do if you're involved in restaurants is every week is something.
Make a promotion. Yeah, right.
Like if this week is DC Beer Week and it goes well, next week is DC Beer Week Redo.
Exactly.
And it goes well, so that's very good. I recommend. It's hard for me to say this because I know that we are essentially a bar. And when you go to a bar, you don't really care about desserts, but the desserts are really good. So let us start today. We're going to go local today, a little local. We're going to go with the Nats because I'm...
it's like where the crowd groans.
Yeah,
I can't.
Everybody who knows me, texts me during these games saying things like Bill Isaacson writes. He goes, "I hope you're not watching." Well, of course I'm watching. Of course I'm watching. Chris and I go back and forth on these games. They're terrible. I'd like to say to Tom Boswell, it's nice that you got here finally. That the Nats are done. The Nats are done. Gary, why don't you do the quick math on the Nats for the rest of the season?
So they're
not going to get the wild card.
The Nats currently chasing Philadelphia and Atlanta.
In the NL East.
Both
Tom
each of
Boswell,
those teams.
Who ripped me for calling Steven Strasburg the Orchid. Time and time again, he ripped me. What is this guy watching? Well, you know what I'm not watching? I'm not watching him pitch. Do you know how many innings he's pitched this year? I believe it's 85.
Right, but he's coming back, Tone.
Just a little bit of a nerve. A little bit late, Tone. It's just a nerve impingement.
Going to pitch him every other day.
The always unavailable Steven Strasburg.
So if Philly and Atlanta, and we're talking strictly about the division here, right?
Yeah, because you can't make the wild card.
We're not going to make the wild card.
So if Philly and Atlanta, who are currently 68-55, if they both played essentially 500 ball, went 20-19.
Which is below what they've done all season.
Considerably. Right?
Yeah.
The Nats would then need to go 26-11 to come in tied with them. I don't know what
no
would happen.
No evidence
in the
they will do that.
But you're talking about a team that is currently 62-63, needing to go
26-11 in late August. Yeah. So here's, I guess, the essence of what I want to say. Is this Chris and I go back and forth, Michael and I go back and forth, and everybody knows everybody's pain in this. They have lost. Now, this is what you need to know about them. The Miami Marlins are a terrible team.
Mm-hmm. They have Stanton, they have Ozuna,
They have Yelich. They are a terrible team. They have one quality player, JT Realmuto, the catcher, who the Nats should have given up everything for. Yeah.
Oh, we
because
got
he would have solved their problem for 5 years. And they have a problem at catcher. And they didn't do that. They were 2-15 going into the weekend. They beat the Nats twice on Saturday and Sunday. They were 2-15 team. Yeah, it was really close yesterday, wasn't it? This is after the All-Star break, because everybody says after the All-Star break, well, now we've got to buckle down. Now this means business.
What does
now
that mean?
You know, now we've got to show what we are. And you listen to the broadcast. There's 37 games left. You listen to the broadcast and you listen to F.P. Santangelo. And without being too critical of F.P. Santangelo.
Fairly positive, baby.
What he says on almost every player is this. Oh, man, he's getting locked in now.
Oh, yeah.
He's getting locked in.
Look
now,
out, come October.
There's 37 games. You get locked in now. What good does that
Tony,
do?
Tony, my aunt, no team.
What does that do?
I believe this is accurate, at least as far as the National League is concerned. No team in the National League had lost more games than Miami coming into the series. I mean, they were the worst team in the league. The league.
I can't.
How about Gio Gonzalez?
Watch.
He's
Gio anymore.
No.
I can't. It makes
Chris
me so irrationally
like
angry.
I hate him so much.
There's a lot
much
more expletives but than that. But yeah. Yes, I can't.
He can't get out of
when
the
when he
fifth
gave
running
up the home run yes to the pitcher, that hurt. The guy who hadn't had an extra base hit in like 2.5 years, he jacks one. And then he just the walking around the we've talked about it.
He walks around the mound.
Like he's never walked anyone in his life. When
walks,
in fact he
in
can't throw a pitch. And why do we have him?
I think he had 6 pitches in the first inning and was up to like 30 by the second
I want to check
inning.
I know he did his typical 108 and 5 innings.
Walks around the mound muttering to himself like a lunatic on a subway.
It's the first time I've ever walked someone. How is this happening to me?
He's terrible. And I guess
7-something ERA the last
the good
like
thing is Bryce is
starts
up to like 235 right on time. Getting hot.
Yeah.
He's locked in, Tone.
He's locked in. They have one great player. They got Max Scherzer.
Going to win
they
the
Cy Young.
They
can't pitch him every day. They're wasting his prime. Mm-hmm. He gives them everything. He wins all the time. If he doesn't win, it's because they have blown the lead, not because he didn't do anything. Because he's great.
Right, or he's lost 2-1.
They have Tanner Roark, who has pitched very well since the All-Star break.
He was terrible before, but you're right. Yes,
now
he's
they have
much
and
better.
They have nothing else. They have the always unavailable Steven Strasburg. And they have some minor leaguers. They have Rodriguez. They have Malone. They got minor leaguers. Helixson is now out. The move for the Nats pitchers is the same all the time. If they do anything bad, if especially bullpen guys, they go right on the DL. They say, oh, my shoulder. Oh, my
my arm. Oh,
my,
I think it's
arm. My arm. My arm.
Yeah. They don't accept the fact that they're terrible. Now, I love Mike Rizzo, but I will blame Mike Rizzo for this bullpen for year after year after year. There's 20 or 30 guys that show up. What is it? What I can't stand reading is I can't stand reading people in the post, and I'm thinking of someone specifically. I'm not naming this person.
Hmm. You want to do initials?
No.
Who
wrote the other day, that bullpen was really solid.
They're garbage.
No, it wasn't.
The bullpen is garbage.
Doolittle was solid. Nobody else was solid. Nobody else. Don't tell me Ryan Madsen was solid. Don't tell me Sammy Salinas. Stop.
I mean, Trinan had a pretty good year.
That's right.
For another team.
Yeah.
How about my guy who we waited 2 years for?
Coda Glover.
Stinks.
Had one good performance and then lost 2 games.
Yeah.
It was the 2 games in a row in the 9th inning, you know, that they lost. It's discouraging beyond words. And the two people I would sing, I don't know about this. I don't know. What is the pitching coach's name?
We'll have to find that.
Not Mike Maddox. I think it's, what's his name? He used to be a pitcher. Rick It's not Rick Springfield.
No, I don't think so. It's not Ricky Nelson. It's not Rick Ankiel.
Derek Lilliquist. He used to be a pitcher for the A's.
So here's what I would say about him.
Like I said, Rick.
Does anybody believe that he's as good as Mike Maddox? The way the pitching staff has collapsed?
Yeah.
And does anybody honestly believe that Davey Martinez is as good as Dusty? If you want to replace Dusty, I've always said if you want to replace Dusty Baker, I'm okay if you get somebody better. Do you think that Davey Martinez is better?
Did you see the Dusty interview in the Post?
No, what did he say?
He was cackling? Certainly internally, but he was pretty gracious externally. But, I mean, he has to be just looking at this because it's not just that it's a pretty good team. They're losing.
They're three and seven in their last ten.
Just that game yesterday, two hits. I know Urena has really good stuff.
He's really good. He wants to hit somebody in the arm for another team.
Right. I mean,
at 99, we've talked,
the Dusty thing is a cautionary tale. It was the same situation with Maryland football years ago with Ralph Friedgen. I understand being frustrated, being angry, needing a scapegoat, wanting to whack a guy. That happens. But to your point, it has to be someone
better.
Gotta
be better.
Because you have to have a solution. You can't just say, well, he's gone. Now we're better. It's not you weren't bad because of him.
No.
And so this clearly hasn't worked out for Martinez.
I don't know how you all feel about this. I don't feel this way. I can root for football teams, and I don't feel this way. I can root for basketball or hockey teams, and I don't feel this way. It is because baseball is on every single day.
You watch them so
and
much.
Emotional
you
commitment
live
to it.
With it on such an Absolutely. Extended platform. And even if you miss a couple of weeks, there's still 100 games. There's always in your mind 100 games left. And you get to this point where it's a little cooler in the morning and you realize this season is sort of over. And they have damaged you. They've damaged you.
It's like a relationship.
This.
You watch. I watch them every single night.
The only thing
that I have is Georgetown basketball, but I'm so dead inside for that.
Yeah.
I died a long time ago on that one. So I mean, the Nationals have been a disappointment in the playoffs, but a source of pride during the season. I mean, they've been very good over the last 5 years.
They got all-stars. Their hitting is so discouraging because it's feast or famine. They have a lot of 14-run games, and then they get two hits against a guy whose claim to fame is he was suspended for 6 games because he deliberately threw at a guy who could be the rookie of the year.
At home when it matters, that was a bad show.
So you carry it with you a little bit. It's so depressing, so disheartening because it, like yesterday's
I mean, don't take
loss,
it out on your children, but
well,
it's
speak
depressing.
For yourself. yesterday's loss was more disheartening, I found, than Tell even me. Even a few of the Grand Slam losses.
Yeah.
Only because Cubs it was like it was like
it's
a,
demoralizing.
It was a give up.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, it's kind of like well now down. It's you know kind of
now. I think even
like
FP,
I may not watch all that.
Even
much.
FP might have been discouraged by
yeah,
that.
Maybe.
Now we're starting to come around. Now, Davey's really got the team rallying.
Davey's locked in. Keep the line moving.
I'm going to tell you, if it was a 200-game season, I'd like our chances.
The line moving? The line moving should be people fired. That well, should be the line.
Aren't there like 10 players who are probably going to leave or the contracts are up moving into next year?
I guess Murphy and Harper, everybody.
I mean, they're the big ones.
Yeah.
Wow. Can we make the bullpen leave other than Doolittle?
And do you think Davey Martinez will be back for year two with this?
I do. But I think for the first time, it's me and I'm projecting and I may be wrong, but I'm thinking that for the first time, people look at this season and they don't walk into next season with optimism. I think you've always walked into optimism.
Right.
Every single season that Harper has played here and Strasburg has played here, honestly,
yes.
You have walked into with optimism.
Well,
I don't think they will.
Yeah, they had never ended the season appearing worse. It was just some hard luck.
You mentioned in passing, but I do think it is worth noting that Scherzer is going to win three straight Cy Youngs.
They're talking about him as the MVP.
I mean, you know, he was hitting when they played the Mets. And
he's hitting 280.
He was hitting better than his average. Now, I know it's a pitcher, but his average was higher than any Mets starter.
He's going to win the Silver Slugger Award.
At least we're not the Mets.
He's
brilliant.
If you could pitch him every day, you would. Yeah. His arm would fall off.
I love him.
You pitch him every day. All right, let's get out of here. We come back. We'll go to football, right? Well, Mike Freeman of Bleacher Report will join us, and we'll ask him questions that will make him angry, and because he always gets angry. But I'm going to hold off on the
Kaepernick
talk, on the anthem and the Kaepernick stuff.
Oh, God.
I'll hold off. For
there
a
we
while.
Go.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All right, this is a new ad. I have not read this ad. I don't even know how the company is pronounced.
Get your popcorn
when we
ready.
Talked about this early, Chris said this is something that he wants.
We're so getting it. Not just wants.
Let's just read the copy. We've all been there. You're streaming a movie, and it stops to buffer at the most climactic moment. Now, when we say we've all been there, I haven't been there. You're video chatting with your friend. I have not done that. And you get the poor connection error message in the middle of telling an important story. The people behind Eero, E-E-R-O, is it Eero? Do we think that's how
it's
pronounced?
I believe it's
Eero. Eero, I think it's pronounced feel your Eero. Pain. They know there are a few things Eero. More frustrating than a slow, unpredictable Wi-Fi connection. So they started Eero to build the Wi-Fi we all wish we had in our homes, a fast, reliable connection in every room and the backyard, too. With Eero, you can install an enterprise-grade Wi-Fi system in your home in just a few minutes, which, of course, I can't do. Simply download the Eero app on your iOS or Android devices.
Yeah, that's
devices.
Your iPhone.
Okay. And it'll walk you through each step of the process. It's quick, easy, and painless. Even
representative.
Better,
representative.
Eero systems work with the internet service provider you already have to unlock the full potential of your connection. Now it says endorsement required. Mm. Please talk about your personal experience with Eero. I have none, but Chris,
yeah.
Do you, Nigel, do you have experience?
No, I was going to say, you went on a road trip with Eero, right? Wasn't that your personal experience with it?
That was Eero Smith.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Go ahead.
So we are spending some cash on new TVs and a new network.
Oh, yeah. You told me
about
that.
In the house. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And we are getting an Eero network system because our Wi-Fi is a bit spotty in places in the home. And, you know, I like to have good Wi-Fi.
That's a big home.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you have 25,000 square feet, it's hard to reach everywhere.
Right.
Anyway, yes, we are getting it with two access points. And, you know, no need for a discount, you know, given this personal endorsement, but it certainly wouldn't hurt.
So, Tony, just so you can understand, you know Wi-Fi. Generally speaking, what that is.
Wi-Fi.
Right.
There it is.
Wi-Fi.
So this thing. So Eero has these hubs, essentially, that you can plug into various rooms, and it sort of enhances your Wi-Fi.
It means, like, wherever you go in your house, your internet is
strong.
Eero truly is a game changer.
Yeah, that's what I think.
But don't take my word for it. Check it out for yourself. And right now, Eero is offering my listeners free overnight shipping to the United States or Canada. Just visit Eero.com and choose overnight shipping at checkout. Then enter the promo code Tony to make it free. That's Eero, E-E-R-O.com, promo code Tony for free overnight shipping to the United States and Canada.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Dave Kogan. And he writes, for your listening pleasure, please find another song by my son's band, The Influence, titled Colorado Laser Storm. You were kind enough to play the title cut from their Falling Objects album last year. He and I have been loyal little since you attended an ice cream social fundraiser at Woodburn Elementary School back in the early 90s. You had just picked up your father at the airport and both of you dutifully attended. The organizers of the event knew that you had a good chance. They had a good chance to coerce you into coming since parking was free. Shockingly, you disappeared somewhat early. In any event, you signed an autograph for my son which doubled his collection. You and Smokin' Joe Frazier are the only two autographs he's ever acquired. They're both worth about 23 cents on eBay. To return the favor, he'd like to invite you and all of the TK family to Jam and Java in Vienna on Friday, August 17th. Sadly, we got this late.
That's where Jingle Fest was.
That's right by the Solizomans.
The Influence will be performing and did perform with Fuzz Queen, Dr. Robinson's Fiasco, and the NRIs. Parking free there, too. So very, very nice. Colin Kogan is the drummer and co-writer of The Influence. Mike Freeman of Bleacher Report joins us now, and this makes me happy because the long NFL drought is over for me, and having to watch much more basketball and hockey than I cared to, off-season basketball and hockey, I now get into something that I think is real, even though its influence may be waning to some degree. Let us get to a couple of specific things. There are two great players out there who are not in camp. Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald. These are dominating defensive players, one for the Rams and one for the Raiders. And I think you'd probably agree, Mike, that those two teams have real chances to be very, very good this year. What is their status? And how do you walk out on a contract? How does that work?
Well, good to be with you again, Tony. I think Aaron Donald is closer to getting done than Mack is, but they're both going to be I think Mac's going to be a really long time. And how do they walk out of the contract? Here's the thing. The league is really exploding in terms of money, and these players see that, and they're like, screw this. I'm undervalued, and I'm going to hold out for more money. Now, should they do that or not do that? I don't know, but I mean, the owners are making a lot of cash. They see coaches making a lot of cash. They see a lot of people around them making tons of money, so they want to make sure they get their share. And a guy like Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald and some other guys, they're dramatically underpaid. Now, they signed the deals.
Yes.
And the union negotiated these really stupid rookie deals that these guys signed. I think they see it as, I can make more money and I'm going to make more money. So I can't blame them.
So let me get to this. Why does this happen so much more in football than any other sport? This happens all the time in football. Yeah. And let's go back over this very important point. Usually within 1 to 2 years, they've signed this deal. They've signed it. Is their representation bad? Why does this happen so much in football?
Here's why. Well, there's two big reasons. One is that players look at their contracts and know that, and look at these other sports like basketball. Basketball is a big thing for NFL players right now. They look at what basketball players are making, and they see guaranteed deals.
Yes.
And players look at their deals and see that they're not guaranteed. And they're in a sport that's ruining their brains and disabling their bodies long term. And they say, we should have guaranteed contracts, not the NBA. So that's a big, big part of this. They just
so get your union to hold everybody out, right?
I think eventually Tony's going to come to that. The current CBA is up soon, and I think you're going to see a big push for players to hold out.
Yeah,
and get a better deal. But here's the thing, and you know this. These guys don't have money to hold out a year or two.
Right.
They just don't. So it's going to be a big, big fight for them down the road.
All right. So let me go from the sublime to the ridiculous. Jalen Ramsey. Who is this guy? Who is this guy, Mike? Who's this guy?
He's actually a really terrific player who but also like every quarterback in the league. He plays with Jaguars. He's a very, very good defensive back. He's one of the best in the league. And GQ gave him a nice platform, and he just went off on everybody. I thought it was funny, but a lot of the quarterbacks that he ripped were not laughing. So I got to say, Tony, there's not a lot I disagreed with what he said. I read his comments, and I was like, he's not completely wrong about these guys.
He is killing quarterbacks. He is absolutely killing quarterbacks, which means they're probably going to target him if they can, and we'll see how good he is. But at the same time, he crushed Matt Ryan, didn't he? There was a couple. Who else did he crush? He crushed Joe Flacco.
Josh Allen.
He crushed Josh Allen. He crushed these people, right. And he's playing on the opposite side of the line of a guy who I don't think's any good at all. Blake Bortles. He didn't crush him,
well,
did he?
Yes. And that, no, he did not. He praised him because it's his teammate. But yeah, the harshest criticism I thought was Josh Allen. That was pretty rough. And you make a great point. One of the things that's going to happen with him is that now I think every offense is going to say, oh, okay, that's what you think about our quarterback, or that's what you think about quarterbacks. Well, we're going to attack you even harder. But listen, that Jaguars defense, Tony, is no joke. I mean,
right?
People may not be aware of it because it's in Jacksonville, but that defense can back up what he's saying. So that's going to be one of the most interesting parts, to see how these quarterbacks, when he plays some of them, or the offenses in general, how they react. Because they don't, in general, guys don't like when Ramsey did talks like that. In general, the league doesn't like that. In general, players don't like that. They want you to show respect for each other. But he will be able to. I'll tell you this. He's one of those guys that can back it up, and that defense can back it up.
So this is what I'm going to get to, because I know you remember this, and I remember this, though I'm not quite certain of the guy's name. Some years back, 6, 7, 8 years ago, some mouthy DB on the Pittsburgh Steelers said something about Tom Brady. And yeah. Tom Brady went after him And after he threw a touchdown pass right next to him, he even went over to him in the end zone to basically say, maybe you ought to shut up. Now, Tom Brady is 41 now and maybe can't do that anymore, but I did notice that Jalen Ramsey did not criticize Tom Brady, right?
I don't believe he did, no. I think he also had some nice things to say about Aaron Rodgers and some other guys. But I remember, Brady went up to that DB and got in his face. The only time I've ever seen Brady really do that.
Yeah.
Players, they pay attention to this stuff. They see it. They'll say it doesn't bother them. Like Flacco said, I don't care what he says.
But sure he does. Of course he cares what he says.
Yes.
Sure. I was sort of amazed at how many guys. I mean, he killed Matt Ryan. Oh, he just eviscerated Matt Ryan, right?
I think he called him overrated.
My interpretation was he said it was the fact that he was coached by Kyle Shanahan. You know, other than that, he stunk.
System guy, yeah.
You know.
System, yeah.
Anyway.
It's gonna be fun. I like this for our jobs. This stuff is fun, but it's in the league. The players, they don't really like this stuff.
So it leads to the obvious question of the first-round quarterbacks. And so you have Josh Allen, and you have Josh Rosen, you have Sam Darnold, you have Baker Mayfield, and you have Lamar Jackson. Which one, Mike, are we expecting to see most quickly? And will any of them start game one?
That's a great question. And I think probably Allen would have the best chance. And I think Lamar will probably have the least chance, obviously. Unless Joe Flacco gets hurt, nothing's going to happen there. But Allen, I think, just doesn't have a lot of good quarterbacks around him. The quarterback situation in Buffalo is pretty awful. So he has a really strong chance of starting there. But one of the things I think you're going to see is with a lot of these guys, you're going to see them play somewhat. They're not just going to sit on the bench the whole year and do nothing. They're going to I think what teams are trying to do now is get these guys somewhat involved in some fashion. Instead of just sitting them on the bench the way it used to be, they're going to try and get these guys involved. And I think Allen has a really good shot at starting and playing a lot because of the situation there. But he's the biggest name, I think, of all those guys that has a chance to really play a lot.
Well, especially with McCarron getting hurt, right?
See,
I watched the Jets a little bit.
Darnold has looked good, I thought.
Yeah, but Teddy Bridgewater is better. Yeah. Teddy Bridgewater is a pro quarterback. The guy in Minnesota got rid of everybody in order to get Kirk Cousins. And he got rid of pro quarterbacks. Don't you think, Mike? They had pro quarterbacks in Minnesota.
Think Bridgewater is one of the more just underrated quarterbacks. He's just been hurt. But when he's healthy, he's very good.
I agree with that.
He got hurt. He was having a great season. He got hurt. Everybody forgot about him.
So what do you hear about Cousins? What do you hear about him in Minnesota?
I think they think they got a really good guy there. They think he's good, and they think he's going to combine him with that defense that they've improved. I think they had a good quarterback with Bridgewater, and they should have stuck with him. But I understand what they're thinking, and they think that they got a really good quarterback who can be consistent in that offense and aid that defense. The star in Minnesota is that defense.
Yeah.
And you just need a quarterback to not screw things up, more or less. But they think they got more than that. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. But I think they really like him and what he's doing.
Do we have an anthem policy yet? Or is there nothing?
There is nothing, Tony. And here's the thing. There's not going to – no matter what they do, they put themselves in this box where no matter what they do, nothing's going to matter. Because the President of the United States is going to attack them no matter what. If they stay in a tunnel, he's going to attack them. If they raise a fist, he's going to attack them. If they take a knee, he's going to attack them. He's the catalyst here, and they kowtow to him, and now he's just going to keep going after them all the time and using the NFL as some type of rallying point for his base. But instead of the league, instead of just kowtowing him, he just said, screw you, we're going to do what we want. We're a private business. We don't we can our players can do what they want. They're peacefully protesting. They're not doing anything wrong. But instead, they went way overboard to satisfy the president, and now there's nothing they can do. No matter what policy they come up with, it won't work because the president will attack it, and that's where we are. It's been horribly mishandled by the league, and it's going to keep getting, it's going to be keep being like this.
So I don't want to bite the hand that feeds me, and ESPN feeds me very well. I couldn't help but notice that the new president of ESPN, Jimmy Pitaro, in comments to reporters the other day, said to the NFL directly, we're not going to show the anthem. We're just not. We're not showing the anthem. Do you think Fox and NBC and CBS will do the same?
I think eventually they're all going to do that. I think eventually they're going to sort, all the networks going to sort of bow to pressure and just not show it because it's going to be easier for them not to. I think in the short term, you're going to see it. But I think in the long term, that's going to be the policy of all the networks. It's this whole thing is just incredible to me. We could so, talk about it for
well. This
hours.
Is this is the last question I have, and it always gets to this question: why can't the owners and the players? Why can't the owners say to the players, "We need you to stand. What do you want from us? We'll give it to you. What do you want from us?" Why can't they get to that? The NBA did that. Why can't they?
It's a great question, and the answer is complicated, but it comes down to, Tony, there's a use the NBA as an example. The players and the owners of the NBA have a mutual respect. The owners see the players as partners. The players see the owners as partners. They work together. In the NFL, the owners see the players as cattle.
Right.
And there's no trust there. So they can't do that because the players don't trust the owners, not to mention them. I think there's a significant number of owners who don't like what the players are doing, just want to play football and shut up.
And well, that's fine. Yeah. I mean, if everyone is entitled to do what they want to do, then you can't say the players are okay, but the owners aren't okay. I mean, it's okay if some owners feel that way.
I agree. It's okay if they feel that way, but this is why though there's an impasse,
right?
Because the players see this as a life and death issue for people of color. And the owners see it as a business decision. So that gap can't be breached unless something dramatic. And then you have the president acting as an irritant. So it's just, yeah, it's complicated. And the NFL made it more complicated. So here we are.
All right. Thank you, Mike. We'll talk to you soon when we're back on schedule.
Thanks, Tony.
Mike Freeman of Bleacher Report, boys and girls. We'll take a break. We'll come back with news. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
So this is the Lowe's ad, and I struggle with the Lowe's ad because I'm not a tool person.
I think you've been doing a great job with the Lowe's ad.
So I want to talk to you about Lowe's, my new go-to destination for craftsman products. They have everything I need to help me tackle projects around my home. From mechanics tool sets to tool storage and more, both in store and online. There's zero chance.
Stop the hammering.
I will call Phil Griffin.
I don't hammer anything.
It's over here.
I tried, over there.
Is that
my front fence is breaking. One of the panels is breaking apart. I went out there the other day, took a hammer and smashed it, made it worse. One of the cool and different things you'll find in the Lowe's Craftsman lineup are mechanics tool sets and gunmetal finish. What's so great about that? Well, the gunmetal chrome finish is corrosion resistant. That means the tools are more durable and long lasting. And the best part, if you're a stickler about cleaning your tools, it makes them easier to clean. Craftsman, I think it's owned by people who were our employers, Gary,
yes,
and I, the, early on, the Rails
owned,
Brothers.
I think, by the Danaher Corporation,
which is owned by the Rails Brothers. Yeah. Mitch and
Steven and Mitch Rails.
Lowe's carries a 51-piece and an 81-piece mechanics tool sets in the gunmetal chrome finish. And I just add parenthetically, why would you buy the 51 when you can buy the 81?
Absolutely.
The 81's
more.
The set comes with the new industry-leading Craftsman 120 tooth ratchet, which offers extreme accessibility. So just say one of your projects happens to be in a really tight space to get to. And you definitely need to check out the 120 tooth ratchet. It has a 3-degree arc swing. Don't know what that does?
Oh.
I didn't either, but I do now because I'm reading. A 3-degree arc swing means you can loosen or tighten bolts with less movement in those hard to reach spots. With its slim head and 3-degree arc swing, you can get into narrow spaces and with ease and quickly tighten or loosen any fastener. And if you see me trying to do this, please call the police. Because I can't.
They're probably already there.
Lowe's and Craftsman are both deeply rooted in heritage and quality. Like their customers, these two brands have a shared passion for hands-on doing. Lowe's and Craftsman make it easy to tackle any auto or do-it-yourself project on your list. Shop the new home of Craftsman today at Lowe's.com/Tony. That's Lowe's.com/Tony.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Kevin Taylor, who writes, "Hey, Dr. Kornheiser and crew, this is my latest single, Don't Be Late. Love the show. As always, you can find me at kevintaylormusic.com or on Facebook at Kevin Taylor Music. Also, go Caps." Well, the Caps aren't playing right now. Sorry about the Nats' current situation. I'm a Rangers fan. I know the frustration of regular and postseason ineptitude. Do you think that's a New York Rangers fan or a Texas Rangers fan?
New York.
I'm going to say Texas. He's talking about baseball.
Texas has gotten into the World Series and not won it.
Yes, they've had a lot of heartbreak late in the season and the postseason.
So if people want to send in this high-quality music, and it is high-quality music, how do they do it?
You can send us your music at jingles@tonykornheisershow.com. We do ask you to send in your music. If you've got a friend or a brother.
You've got to get permission.
We have to get their permission. Also, if you could send it to us in MP3. But we love to get your music. We've got all kinds of great stuff we haven't played this summer. We'll play it this fall.
Yeah.
Send us your music. We love it. We absolutely do.
Nigel has news for us.
I do indeed, Mr. Tony. And it wasn't that long ago. I want to say, was it 2 weeks ago that the revelations came out about what was going on in the Catholic Church in Pennsylvania?
That's about right. It's all tied to this grand jury. I'm looking if I can find the date. But they released this grand jury report investigating six of the eight parishes in the state.
Involving 300 priests, 1,000 children over 7 decades.
Terrible.
On the heels of that, and obviously this is not the first incident involving the Catholic Church, Pope Francis, or Pope Frankie, as we like to call him here on this show.
Frankie Butts.
Yes. Released a letter apologizing, saying, among other things, we showed no care for the little ones.
This has not been acknowledged before, right, Chris? Now, it's not even been acknowledged.
They have apologized very broadly, the Catholic Church, very broadly for, I mean, we've now been through since at least 2009, a series of, both in this country as well as in Ireland, obviously, where the Pope is going this week, a number of these things. They've broadly apologized. This is a little bit more, now they've also been criticized, by the way, including in this last one, for not apologizing quickly enough. The Pope did not. The Pope was actually coming into today. The Pope was getting a fair amount of criticism because in his Sunday sermon in Rome or in Vatican City, he didn't address it. Right? They put out a statement on Thursday that was pretty strong. He didn't address it on Sunday, and then they put this out today. This is more heartfelt, more personal, and it's an acknowledgement. In a way I think you haven't seen before, and we talked about this off air, but I think this is right, in a way you haven't seen before of the lifetime
trauma,
that this is not just – the other thing is that I don't know how you address. They've tried to, but I mean this is – this is not proof of this. We had proof of this a long time ago, but this is systemic. I mean this is not – a pocket here, a pocket there. We are now looking at, again, you were talking about worldwide. There are allegations I read recently in Australia. I mean, this is not...
When he's going to Dublin, too.
He's going to Ireland this week, and there's concerns. I talked to a woman yesterday, actually, who is Irish, family is still there, who said there are concerns that they sold X number of tickets, but there's a concern that a bunch of people will no-show, purposely bought the tickets and will purposely no-show as a protest, which, I mean, in Ireland at one point is beyond unthinkable. I mean, in terms of the Pope coming there would be a massive deal.
There are stories that you read every day about the mass exodus from the faith, at least not necessarily from the faith or the spirituality, but from the organization.
Correct. The hierarchy of the church.
So I'm not Catholic, and you are, and this will be a question that you might have much better insight to. Do you think that there would be any, this is like thousands of years of law, but do you think there would be any change, any relaxation, any sense that married people could be involved in the priesthood? Because it's always been banned to them, and you can add one and one together.
Correct. Gosh, I mean, I hope so. I grew up, I don't think so. I grew up Catholic. I went to church. I went to CCD. I got all the sacraments. My wife went to Catholic school her whole life. We do not go to church. My mother, who went to church literally every single day, not every Sunday, every day, does not go. I mean, these are anecdotal. I'm sure the church is not grieving the loss of Chris Saliza from its daily masses or its weekly masses, but I do think that it is. It just became to the point I would go, and it was very difficult for me to sit there. I grew up with it. I mean, it was a part of every day of my life at some level. I went to Catholic school for a time, but I just couldn't sit there after all this stuff. I just couldn't. And I told you this, the priest that my priest in my parish in a very small town in Connecticut growing up, my dad, who's suspicious of everything, but he was like, you're not going to be an altar boy, which in that was a big thing. Though they were cool. I know this sounds weird now, but that was cool to be, you know, you were on the altar and all this stuff to be an altar boy. My dad was like, no way. And then we found out in like 2008 or 2009 when they listed out the whole, you know, there was a massive number of priests. This guy who had been my parish priest had been moved around, you know, like they did with lots of other people moved around. Again, it's not the, well, it is the crime, and the cover-up makes it so much worse. You read, I would urge people, read, it's 900 pages long. You don't need to read the whole thing, obviously, of this, the report about Pennsylvania. But it is, it's beyond troubling. I mean, again, it is not one-offs. It is not a patch here or a bad actor there. It is systemic, and the cover-up is systemic. The knowledge that this was going on, and it, rather than address it publicly, the answer was, how can we cover this up? And that to me is...
On the periphery of this is that excellent play, Proof.
Mm.
It's really good. It's really
and
worth
a
seeing.
And
a movie.
Correct.
With Meryl Streep.
Yes. Was it Doubt or was it Proof?
No, it's with Philip Seymour Hoffman and Meryl Streep.
Oh, it's brilliant.
What else do you
have? From that horrifying tale to another one involving customs and border protection.
What is this? This is in the Post today.
Yes, we're learning about some unbelievably disturbing things that happened in searches to women coming back into the country. And I don't want to go into the details, but basically...
Read the story.
Yeah, read the story. And I think, I don't know how many cases they've said that they're looking into now. I think it's, her case is one of at least 11 since 2011.
What are you
examined
doing?
By the Center for Public Integrity.
What are you doing?
Where there are gross violations of the physicality of these individuals.
What are you
doing? And their civil rights. I mean, it's just appalling. Appalling.
Let's get better news.
You know what? I was going to save this for the end, but I think we need to do this now.
Good.
Cheer us up.
Have you ever been to the Souther's Marsh Golf Club, Mr. Tony?
No, where is that?
That is in Plymouth, Massachusetts.
Never been.
Sounds
lovely. Well, on Friday, yeah, apparently it's...
We didn't land on Plymouth Rock.
Yeah. Apparently an argument occurred between two foursomes at the end of the day. This is right around sunset.
Right.
One of the parties had a 47-year-old man, another a 57-year-old man. There was a melee that ensued.
Seemed young to me.
Yeah, just a couple of kids.
Yeah.
The 47-year-old man has been arrested and charged with mayhem after the incident in which...
Mayhem?
In which he's accused...
Bit of a mayhem
yes,
charge.
I'll explain what that is in a second. In which he's accused of biting off the finger of this 57-year-old man at the knuckle.
Oh.
Okay?
Really?
Yes.
You take it off at the knuckle.
I further researched this. The police reported like, yeah, I'm sorry, we couldn't... The finger's gone. No, we couldn't reattach it. I mean, I think they had it, but they couldn't reattach it. So now this 57-year-old man is without a finger. From the 911 dispatcher, be advised, apparently are the two foursomes that got into an altercation, and there's been a finger that's been bitten off.
Wow.
The victim's laying down on the main entrance road in between three golf carts. Mm-hmm. Mayhem is defined as malicious intent to maim or disfigure another person, punishable by up to 20 years. So I hope that was a good round, because that's going to be the last one you get.
Chris has his hand.
Question. I mean, obviously, I've been in a lot of fights in my life. You look at me, you think that. But just let's presume that, I hadn't been in a lot of fights. When the dude bites the thumb off at the joint, like, is it then
over? Do they declare a winner?
Yeah, is it like over at that point? Or is like there's still like...
I think it's a pause. I think it's appalling.
Because it's kind of like, whoa.
How do you top that?
This went up a level.
And by the way, so at some point.
There's a dude's thumb laying on the ground.
And actually, it wouldn't be on his on the ground. As you think about it, at some point, his teeth are clenched, closed, and inside his mouth is what remains of the finger.
You got to spit the finger out.
Yeah. And I think what he said was.
Or do you take it and just chuck it? It's now, you know, fish food.
I take it. You make him eat the thumb. That's dark.
I think what he said was, do you like apples?
How do you like them apples?
How do you like those apples?
I don't think that's how that... No, that is how it goes.
Staying with golf, Brent Snedeker is your winner at the Wyndham Championship. Shot a first-round 59, ended up winning by 3 strokes over Webb Simpson to take just over $1 million.
Okay, there's a couple of points to be made in this, because I watched a lot of that. D.A. Points, who I have played golf with in my life, who I like very much, the one time I met him, was wearing a shirt that was so weird looking, it looked like he had measles. It was just an odd shirt. Either that or he looked like the Skittles kid. Like it just was
Skittles pucks.
Very odd design on the shirt. The guy who could have won this tournament is a guy named C.T. Pan. C.T. Pan played great. He gets to the 18th tee box and goes OB on the right. Oops. I mean, it's the worst choke imaginable. This is like... At Rehoboth Beach, the 18th hole has out of bounds all the way down the right, which Gary has managed to find 3 or 4 times in a row.
It's one of my favorite spots.
Yeah, I mean, when there's OB right, you just can't go right. You're tied for the lead.
You're a professional
golfer. You're tied for the lead. You have to go left. It was terrible. And Snedeker, who deserved to win, won. And was very lucky for Wyndham, which is the sponsor, because Snedeker is a Wyndham guy.
Okay.
So that worked out for them.
Wire to wire.
Snedeker shot 59.
59
on opening Thursday.
Round.
Yeah. 59.
What's the record?
On the front?
What's the record in a round?
58.
58?
Yeah.
And what's you chose 60 a couple of times?
No. I always go right through 59.
I
usually go right through 59 around 11 or 12.
My last round, I shot 51. 18.
Nice.
Mini golf.
Mini golf.
Oh, well done.
Beat me by 4 strokes.
Where was Bronson Burgoon? He was not Burgoon. In this tournament.
Bronson Burgoon.
He was at a daycare. Didn't taking care of kids, I believe.
What else? Gooner.
IndyCar driver Robert Wickens is in the hospital after being treated for injuries to his lower extremities, right arm, and spine after his car went airborne after an accident he had with Ryan Hunter Ray at Pocono Raceway. He also suffered with something that was being called a pulmonary contusion. I can only think that's a bruise to your heart. Does that sound
right?
Yes.
That's what it would sound like.
Yes. Terrible.
It was I've not seen the video of this, but the way it's described, it just sounds horrifying.
Yeah.
So there you go.
A little bit of a heart bruise.
Yes.
I mean, you never want to hear damage to the lower extremities.
That's a general sound. Rule. Yeah. And the car apparently was completely disintegrated except for the pod in which the driver was
in. Yeah. Well, that's good news.
Well,
that's why how they build them.
Like that. That is how they build them.
Yep.
Exactly. That's how they build them. Is that good? Are we good?
You wanted an update on DJ Durkin?
Yes. What's happening? Has he been fired yet?
How is he still have a job?
Still not working. And I love this quote. Somebody says, in my opinion, he has zero chance of being retained as the head coach.
Who is that person who said that?
Someone who knows.
Yes. Actually, Paul Feinbaum said that. We trust Paul.
Yeah.
We like Paul.
No, we love Paul, but Paul's sitting in Charlotte.
He's
Paul
not
doesn't
Wallace
know.
Lowe.
Yeah.
Paul doesn't know.
But how can they possibly bring him back?
Yeah, everyone's...
It's not possible.
Everyone
not,
seems
no
to
way.
Agree
no,
that,
way.
That there's zero chance that he's coming back.
How? What's the... You paint the scenario that he comes back. The kids' parents are suing. That will not go away anytime soon, and they will win.
You say that we are a university. This is a teaching moment. It is a terrible tragedy that happened. We feel that the people who are responsible for this have been weeded out.
He's the head coach.
We feel that the head coach has a chance to make up for this with all of the other players he has now, currently, and in the future. And we're going to try and keep the head coach because we're a university. That's how you say it. I'm not saying
boosters and alumni
the press off of that would be terrible because there's unless there is proof that Durkin said, do not do this.
They didn't.
And the guy did it anyway.
Or call 911 immediately.
Did you want to say anything about the Museum of Ice Cream? Did you want to get into that?
We'll get to that later.
Okay.
I want you to explain what the Museum of Ice Cream is.
It's called the tease, folks.
All right, we're out of here. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the FrameBridge ad. I've got this. I like this. If you've been listening to the show, you've heard me talk about FrameBridge. They make it super easy and affordable to frame your favorite things from art prints and posters to the travel photos sitting on your phone. Here's how it works. You go to FrameBridge.com. You upload your photo. or they'll send you packaging to safely mail in your physical pieces. Preview your item online in any frame style. Choose your favorite. Get free recommendations from their talented designers. The expert team at FrameBridge will custom frame your item and deliver your finished piece directly to your door, ready to hang. Instead of the hundreds you'd pay at a framing store, their prices start at $39, and all shipping is free. Plus, my listeners will get 15% off their first order at FrameBridge.com when they use the code TonyK. So it's like really a good deal.
That's great, dude.
It says to give my personal experience. They sent me a bunch of things. They're up on the wall. There's a picture of me and Michael at Augusta at number 12. It's very, very nice. I'm vouching for these things. Get started today. Frame your photos or send the perfect gift for weddings, birthdays, and special events. Go to FrameBridge, FrameBridge.com. Use the promo code TonyK. You'll save an additional 15% off your first order. FrameBridge.com, promo code TonyK. And one more time, FrameBridge.com, promo code TonyK.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Olgar Radio for today. This is Aretha Franklin, who passed away a few days ago at age 76.
Not Patti LaBelle?
It's not just Patti LaBelle. Okay. What happened with that? Fox did that?
Fox's tribute screen to Aretha had like the birth and death years, but a picture of Patti LaBelle, which was an unfortunate mistake.
It wasn't Patti LuPone, but...
Yeah.
Unfortunate mistake.
So Aretha Franklin, this song is by Carole King and Jerry Goffin.
Yes.
This is a song. Do you know the story of how this song was written?
Well, I read it. Okay, yeah. Go
10 minutes on a napkin.
The head of Atlantic Records, Jerry Wexler, was in a cab, and he finds Jerry Goffin and Carole King on the street. And he says, "You know, I was thinking it'd be great to write a song called 'A Natural Woman.'" Huh. And they went home that night.
Yeah,
and
5 minutes.
It.
I gave him a writing credit.
Oh, great.
They shares a writing credit on that.
So yeah. Aretha Franklin, if you were. Now, I do this all the time, and I have that sort of, I have that male prejudice that when I talk about the, you know, the four heads up on the wall in American rock and roll, it's all men for me. But if you were to say, okay, if you put a woman in there, who would the woman be? Well, the reasonable two choices for rock and roll, you would not have Barbara Streisand in rock and roll. She had a couple of hits, but you wouldn't have Barbara Streisand. The two reasonable, most reasonable choices are Aretha Franklin and Diana Ross, it seems to me. And because I never swam in Diana Ross's pool like some people who are sitting to my right.
Played video games with their kids.
Yeah, because I never did that, I would put Aretha Franklin. I mean, I do think Aretha Franklin is a game changer.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you know the habit, the weirdest habit that she had when she appeared? This was written about too. And I have confirmation from a friend of mine who's done this for a living, who has put together, my friend Tom Jones, one of the things that he does, not that Tom Jones.
I was going to say.
My friend Tom Jones, who I played golf with yesterday, his business is to put together private acts. You know, like if you want to have a rock and roll star
at
your house.
Like I want Peyton Manning at my bar mitzvah?
Yes, right. Or if you want to have him at a hall or something like that.
Tony Corn has a
you turn
for
to
you.
Tom Jones, and Tom Jones procures the services, puts the whole thing together. You know, make sure they're there and is there to guarantee it. Well, Tom Jones told me this, and I had read it as well. Aretha Franklin demanded to be paid in cash.
Oh, love it.
Straight cash, homie.
In cash. And you had to bring...
That's gangster.
Let's say, and in those days, let's say it was $100,000.
Sure.
Which is a reasonable sum of money for Aretha Franklin.
Right.
You had to pay her in cash. She put it in a bag and held it. And she never awesome. Lost sight of the bag.
Well that's
and
what
I
you
said,
do.
Why do you think that? And Tom said a lot of the Motown people felt that they had been ripped off.
Sure.
And so cash was the way to ensure that that didn't happen. That's...
Yep.
Can you imagine
that's
that?
That's amazing.
Cash money.
Here's the briefcase.
She's,
your money.
She's, come on. I mean,
she's the best.
Now, I didn't, you know, Respect for Me is an Otis Redding song. It's not an Aretha Franklin song. Spanish Harlem for Me is a Drifter song. It's not an Aretha Franklin song. But Aretha Franklin was undeniable, massive talent and idiosyncratic and very much a diva. You know, all of that stuff. All of that stuff.
The very cool Aretha Franklin story that I was either unaware of or just it happened at a point in my life where I wasn't paying attention, but I assume you knew this at the time, was the 1998 Grammys where she filled in for Pavarotti. Pavarotti was supposed to sing Natural Woman. Norma. Is that correct? Like
it's,
his signature
sure
aria.
It's an aria.
And 11th Hour, 0 Hour, I guess. 0 Hour, 9 a.m., bailed with a sore throat, and they brought her in and said, sort of, do you want to do, respect or something else? She's like, I'll do his thing.
I'll do it right.
You know, right. And I crunched it out, which is very cool.
There's a great story on Aretha Franklin written by my friend David Remnick from 2 years ago in The New Yorker that I commend to everyone.
Oh,
you need to read it. I mean, David Remnick, he can do it.
Springsteen profile, too.
I haven't read it.
Yeah.
He's really good. David, he's really good. So as a matter of fact, I read it, and I sent him a note, and I just, because my another friend, a mutual friend, Doug Alden, sent it to me and said, read this, and I read it, and I sent Remnick a note, and I just talked about how smart it was and how great the context was and how lyrical it was and on and on and on. And I said, if I wasn't such an egomaniac, I might feel envy. And he wrote back and he said, stop with your egomania. You can't fool me. You know. Anyway.
Have you ever heard of her version of The Wait, the band song?
Yeah. She's great.
I haven't heard her do that.
It's worth it. Yeah, I'll play it for you after the
show. So, Nigel, right. you opened. You had a little comedy. Adam Ferrara was in town, so tell us about that.
Speaking of Tom Jones, Adam, because you said to Adam, did you know him?
Not that
time. He talked to Tom and he cleared it
up.
He's like, yes.
So Tom, when we were playing golf yesterday, it was a great... At one point, even Tom said, we lost yesterday, and we're teeing off on, I think it was 16, and we're losing. And he says, this is not good to be Tony Kornheiser's partner when we're going to lose about $8 or $10 and have him have a podcast tomorrow. You're going to be on it. You're going to be on it.
Adam was in town for shows on Friday and Saturday night. Normally he plays the DC Improv. He was playing the Arlington Cinema Draft House.
Ooh, above ground.
Yes.
Very nice.
Which was great fun. I had never performed on that stage. And every time Adam's in town, he's like, hey, do you want to do a set or two?
Yeah.
So I did a short set on Friday night, which was okay. You know, I sort of liken that to a pinch hitter coming into the game late in the game. Hadn't played in 2 or 3 months.
Right.
So it was not great. I'll be the first one to admit it.
But Mark Reynolds striking out after one long foul.
Right. And everyone was nice, you know. And Adam, he's great because I walk off stage and he pops up like Tom Lasorda at the top steps of the dugout, coming to me after I just struck out. And he's like, hey, you know, and he
great
helped
cut,
me work
kid.
On, yeah, yeah.
Good hack.
Very positive and had some great stuff to say. And was like, did you have fun? I said, yeah, I had fun. He said, then you won. It was great. Yeah. And then we sat, we actually drove all around on Saturday. I took him to Mount Vernon. He'd never seen where your first president lives.
Right.
So we saw that. And he sort of did a Venn diagram of like, this is how you really want to build your set list. And so we did that. And I went out on Saturday night. I just crushed. And it was,
oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It was a lot of new
English-speaking people in the audience?
English, yeah. It was mostly Romanian, but okay. I think they just got the gist of it.
Yeah.
And then when I walked off, then it was like a guy walking into the dugout and people are high-fiving you after, a bases loaded double.
So you told me that Adam did local stuff. That Adam did Purple Line stuff and Subway stuff.
At one point he says, and what's going on? He didn't say, what's the deal?
That would be
what's the deal with your Metro? Wow. But he's like, your Metro is always catching on fire. He's like, I listen to Kornheiser. He's like, oh, your trains are on fire. And I have no idea what the Purple Line is, but... obviously, it's terrible, and get rid of it.
Right,
and it was a huge cry from the crowd, so it was very nice.
So you had a good time.
Do you give him tips when he comes off?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
hey, Adam,
we go about two hours.
Sounds like Nige wrote that Metro bit based on what I just heard.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I wrote most of the bits for the other two comics, by the way. Two
you
guys,
did the.
Andy, I'm sorry, I got to get the names right.
Less important than
Ryan
you.
Ryan Nazer and Andy Klein, who were just delightful guys. So it was really, really good. It was good fun.
I wish I texted Nigel this, but
this is so great.
Gary is a nice guy, as everyone knows. And so Gary's like, hey, Nigel, I have a show. Good luck. And I texted, I hope you bomb because it makes me much happier. Because his stories of bombing on air are incredible. Well, the people whispering.
Okay,
well, it's so painful.
It was one time. It was one time. But you,
that what's that you say?
Yeah, no, that was the worst.
Two
ever.
Women in the front row talking, unrelated.
Yes.
So good.
Completely unimpressed.
Yeah, literally, like, anyways, yeah, so let's just have a conversation right in front of me when I was
I'm
doing
sorry,
the act.
Sir, could you keep it down? We're trying to.
You just wanted to slink off. It was miserable.
I did it once.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do it.
No.
Like, it's just terrifying.
No. You did like a stand-up set?
No, I
comedy club?
No, it wasn't that.
You speak publicly all the time.
Well, but this was a long time ago. It was a pilot for a show, and I had a selected audience there. and it was going to be called the Tony Kornheiser. It was called the Tony Kornheiser Show.
It's good
like
name.
25 or 30 years ago, and it would, if it had done well, maybe we would have been on weekly on Channel 7. It was okay, a pilot for Channel 7 at that time. And I went out there with like a three-minute, you know, well-thought-of, rehearsed monologue. And
so live studio audience or
yes,
no?
Yes, yes. Wow. And they were disposed to like me, so I knew I would do okay.
AKA
but it
drunk.
I was terrible. I mean, it was so hard to do. I remember having a conversation with the late and absolutely great Glenn Brenner about this. Yeah. Brenner was brilliantly funny, and I thought that if anybody from sports could do comedy, it was Glenn Brenner. And he told me about bombing, about how terrible it was.
It's the worst.
That like you can go out. You can do two shows, and your first show is good, and you do the exact same material, and nobody laughs at all, and you sweat, you're dying up there.
So
I just couldn't do it.
And there were two shows both nights, and I had something. I had the dog I was taking care of on Friday night, so I was like, I can't stay late for that.
Oh, why don't you put the dog in the audience so that would help you out a little bit?
That might have.
Put the dog
and
down.
Saturday, I walked off. I killed, right? And they're like, well, do you want to stay for the second show? And I was like, no, I'm going to leave when I'm ahead.
Yeah. That's a good move.
Costanza.
Yeah, leave
go out on a high note. Yeah.
So yeah. I mentioned Tom Jones. I'll just make this very brief. Tom Jones told me this fascinating story about his mom. His mother, at age 15 or 16, was living in Scranton, Pennsylvania, where she grew up. And she was the daughter of a coal miner. Scranton, Pennsylvania, that's a rough go. That's 70 miles south of Binghamton. Binghamton is sort of the top of Appalachia. And, you know, it's hard.
Hard scrabble.
It's hard. Anyway, she auditions, or she has a natural talent for singing. And she auditions and wins a local contest. And she gets to go to New York City and audition again. And she's so good, she's a teenager, she becomes hired as the understudy in the Rodgers and Hammerstein show Oklahoma on Broadway. She understudies the Laurie part.
Good Lord.
So the Laurie part, for those of you old enough to know Oklahoma, two of the songs, one of the songs, the big song is Oh, What a Beautiful Morning. I mean, she's doing this as a teenager. Then she goes to London after the war, and she's the star of Oklahoma.
Cool.
She's the star. But what Tom was saying to me is you get done with the theater. This is 1947, 1940. London's bombed. It's not like now. There's no buildings. Right. I mean, this is the terrible post-war. So this is his mother was an enormous singing. Tom can't sing. And he inherited his father's lack of singing ability. But his mother did that. So I went to Alexa last night. It's Alexa, my go-to move. I say, yes. Alexa, can you play me the score to Oklahoma? You know, and it takes a little cajoling. You have to be a little bit more specific. But last night I listened to Oklahoma. There's another great song called People Will Say We're in Love. And that's another one of our songs. And I said, I wrote this to Tom. And he said, every morning of my life to get my fat can out of bed.
She came in and sang,
oh, what a beautiful morning.
That's great.
Now we get out of here. We got it. Did you have anything to say about anything? Did you want to tell your story?
I will mention briefly that I was traveling through Seattle quickly this, or I'm sorry,
Cincinnati.
Through Cincinnati.
Gotta know where you are. One is 2,000 miles away from the other one.
Client was Amazon, so I get confused. Yeah. But, just happenstance, met up, I guess, Ted Kenniston threw it together via the Littles thing on Facebook, but met Anthony Beeson, thankfully left his piano at home.
Yes.
Ted Kenniston and Todd Takei came out from Lexington and
nice?
Had a wonderful lunch with those guys.
Saw the picture on Twitter, that was fantastic.
It was great, and it's amazing, the thing that always impresses me when I go out there and spend some time, is just the across-the-board hatred for Saliza, yep.
Thing about Gary was that he texted me to inform me of that hatred before putting it on Twitter.
You've never polled well in Cincinnati.
Well, it's fake news.
No. By the way, Cincinnati, where I had never been, I spent maybe 90 minutes in,
to get
in
Grater's
the city.
Ice cream.
Home of Grater's
they,
ice
they
cream.
Took,
oh, that's right.
Grater's ice cream, delicious. Grabbed it at the airport, but they took me to a place called Moorline Lagerhouse, which was a really loved the beer there and great food too. Right by the Great American Ballpark down there. It's a beautiful area of the city.
Bengals stadium is right
also
there too,
right there.
Like right next door. Yep.
In most cities.
Yeah, now.
Yeah. They're building them all together.
Well, it's like Audi Field
and
the baseball field.
That's right.
Two big sports, soccer and baseball.
Yes.
Nailed it.
Yeah,
right to break, I think.
We'll come back with email and jingle on Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Marcone, love this.
Put on my boat deck shoes and I went on my way.
Already good.
Unlock the door of my podcast room. It's time to start my day. Let me see Cliffy. You better head down the interstate. And you best not come back stickless. If you do, you can guess your weight. Did you say you were from Memphis?
Oh, boy.
Well, Marcus, where's my meat from the rendezvous? Meat ribs from Memphis. Now go out and get me barbecue. Free ribs from Memphis. Care if it's from Corky's or from Rendezvous. Free ribs from Memphis. Free ribs from Memphis. Till then, I don't want to hear from you.
That's brilliant. That's Kirsten Onstad. And that's a true story. We told Marcus, our Syracuse Cliffy, get us some food.
And he
from
did.
Your hometown.
Yeah, and he did. Beautiful.
Before we get to the mailbag, let me thank Mike Freeman of Bleacher Report for coming on with us today. Let me thank our sponsors, Framebridge, Eero, E-E-R-O, and Lowe's. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review.
And Tony, can I take the opportunity to point out that we will be back here
next Monday
for a pop-up, and the Tuesday after Labor Day, the 4th of September,
we
back
start,
on full-time.
On regular. We're regular at that point.
In with the NFL.
Patrick Smith, Annandale, Virginia. On Saturday night, the woman that I'm related to by marriage and I went to see Adam Ferrara at the Arlington Cinema and Draft House. I was hoping to see Nigel perform, but I learned that Nigel only appeared at the early show on Saturday. Apparently, he doesn't work blue enough for the late show. At the end of his set, I gave Adam Ferrara a hearty La Cheeserie. Instead of giving me the TK salute, Adam responded to the La Cheeserie by giving me a free T-shirt. Classy move.
Nice.
Right? Classy guy. From Jordan Bodow, I hope that's pronounced correctly, just a quick word to say how much I enjoyed Chatter on Sunday night. We drove down from Baltimore after my 17-year-old son participated in an all-day baseball tryout at Johns Hopkins. You were gracious enough to introduce yourself to my hungry son with a handshake, "Hi, I'm Tony," while I was busy deciding which piece of pod knowledge to drop on you before you headed out the door with your goodie bag of Chatter desserts. Last night, that's true. Brought me much joy to witness you dining with the socialite and happier still to watch said 17-year-old inhale the last brownie dessert, which Liz makes, of the D.C. restaurant week. And yet my personal highlight was eavesdropping on your side of the conversation with the socialite, basically getting a very condensed version of what I expect will be Monday's podcast. Within 5 minutes of sitting down, we overheard your hot takes on the orchid. He stinks. Juan Soto, he's only 19, and Liz's brownies. If you don't love that dessert, it's on me. Kudos to Andrew, the socialite's son, for taking such good care of us. And please don't read my name on the air. La Cheeserie JB from Tempe, Arizona. Brian Ricca, Williston, Vermont. Second time emailer. I've had a physical letter read on the air, but that was your second favorite restaurant, The Palm. I'm reluctantly writing to correct your favorite cow milk or Buster only. I take no satisfaction in pointing this out, and this transplanted New Yorker, I grew up in Mount Vernon, New York, and fell in love with a Vermont girl, has grown to love the quality of life here in the Green Mountain State. However, I did gasp when I heard Only, who noted during the July 23rd podcast that Montpelier, Vermont, has about 25,000 people. In fact, the capital of Vermont has less than 8,000 people. That is correct.
Wow.
It's the smallest state capital in the United States and the only state capital that neither has a Starbucks nor a McDonald's. Now that I've gotten that out of my system,
how do you live?
I'm writing also to publicly thank another Vermont Little. Yes, there are a few of us up here. Laura McClure, who made the pilgrimage to Chatter and brought me back a $12 T-shirt, which I proudly wear. Very grateful to you and the whole gang for entertainment as well as the information for life. Isn't that nice?
It is.
A little since the early 2000s. Very, very nice. Hoping to make the pilgrimage to Chatter himself someday. Please Daniel
do.
Dube or Dube, D-U-B-E, Newington, Connecticut. That's near you, isn't it?
It is, yes.
I was at my stepfather's 80th birthday party on August 19th in West Hartford, Connecticut, and spotted this lone bocce ball as a picture of it. Can you identify it as being your missing bocce ball?
If
so, I will seize it immediately and have it returned to you and notify the local authorities to begin an investigation. I'm curious as to how it made its way from the 20015 and traveled 298 miles north to the 06110. I anxiously await your reply. Steve York, Newport News, Virginia. Recently, I was watching the U.S. Swimming Championships with my masculine child and the person related to me by marriage. Yes, we like to watch swimming. When the 400 IM final was in progress, I heard the announcer commenting on the swim of Brooke 40.
Yes.
I turned to my family and I said, I know her.
Aldridge moment.
Well, sort of.
They looked at me with a combination of amazement and doubt. I had to admit, well, I don't really know her. I know her dad. The looks continued. Okay, I don't really know him, but he talks about college sports on Mr. Tony. My son looked at me blankly and my wife just turned away. Brooke came in second, and we look forward to seeing her in the Pan Pacific Championships in Tokyo. Can I call this a David Aldridge moment? Yes.
Sure you can.
Yes. Sully from Boston. That applies to 10,000 people in Boston.
What an interesting last name.
Since your bootsy isn't made for walking yet, and you're probably looking for a grandchild to earn his inheritance by walking before you shuffle off this mortal coil, Ronan, six-week bootsy's junior, has been walking for 6 weeks. He's so good at it, he can do it with a tambourine over his face. Have someone show you the attached video, because you probably don't know what an attachment is. I'd like to see Davy Jones, RIP, pull that trick. Sully from Boston. P.S. Apologies to Mr. Wine Tyrant. It's really not a competition for anyone but his dad. Bootsy is standing now.
Yes.
Bootsy is about ready to cast off. So that could happen any day. By Monday, I expect Bootsy to be walking and to be in here and talking as well. If you're out on your bike, time, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Do it live. I can go write it and we'll do it live.
Oh, Hit me when I least expect it. Know that I can't fade away. Let it lead me forward and leave behind that lonely town as I begin to make my way over towards the land. No, I won't miss my train. Only one could hit me this way. Oh, I'm going there today. And I can't be late. I can't be late. I can't be late. Don't be late. Make a cry when you least expect it. Know that I can make a world. Even then, I don't know. Later on, I'll say I'm sorry. Drive that road from where I'm playing. Only one can take me this way. No, I don't know where I'm going. But I can't be late. I can't be late. I can't be late. Don't be late for you. Breaking up feels so pathetic. Oh, I guess I'll move away. But before I go, oh, I'm dropping to my knees. Only one could hurt me this way. Oh, I'll make my final plea that I can't be late. I can't be late.